Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good morning again, everyone. Yesterday, Mexican fast food chain Chipotle announced that it would stop using genetically modified organisms, more commonly known as GMOs, in its food. And last week, Pepsi revealed it is getting rid of aspartame, the low-calorie sweetener, also known as NutraSweet, getting it out of its Diet Pepsi. And now Tyson Foods is promising to raise antibiotic-free chickens. It's a trifecta of corporate responses to public perceptions of risk. But are they consistent with scientific data on risk? Joining me now to discuss this outburst of corporate responsiveness is Marion Nessel, professor of nutrition and public health at NYU and the author of many books, including Food Politics, How the Food Industry Influences Nutrition and Health. Hi, Marion. Welcome back to WNYC.
Oh, glad to be here.
Is this a coincidence, all three of these things coming one after another after another?
Well, it's catching. It seems like it's an infection. It's just wonderful. I think it's a response to what's happening in the marketplace. Consumers are turning away from products that have antibiotics in them, that have artificial chemicals in them, and they want healthy food that hasn't been processed very much.
If I understand correctly, both PepsiCo with respect to NutraSweet and Chipotle with respect to GMO foods have released statements that say there is no scientific basis for their decisions, just that negative consumer perceptions of these ingredients is more at play. So as a science and food politics person, how much do you think there's a disconnect between perception and reality in either of these cases?
Well, there's always a disconnect between perception and reality, but there's real cause for concern about both GMOs and aspartame. I mean, there have been studies in animals that show that aspartame causes cancer in experimental animals. How good those studies are, we can argue about indefinitely, but they do exist. And it's not the GMOs that are worrying people these days. It's the chemicals that are used with the GMOs, glyphosate or Roundup, for example, where there are now studies that are showing that it has some carcinogenic potential. So it's not as if there aren't reasons for concern. How serious those reasons are, we really can't say. We don't know yet. But these things are not needed in the food supply, so why have them in the food supply?
Listeners, if you want to call up and talk to Marion Nessel about any of these three developments, Tyson Foods taking antibiotics out of their chickens, Pepsi, or I guess not giving the chickens antibiotics would be more apt in this case, Pepsi taking aspartame out of Diet Pepsi, and Chipotle not using GMO foods anymore. Give us a call, 212-433-WNYC, on the science, on the politics, on the perception, any of it, 212-433-9692.
Well, let me say something about the antibiotics, because I don't think there's any question about that.
That's your biggest concern as a scientist, right?
Yeah, it is.
Of the three.
I mean, there's been an attempt to get antibiotics out of farm animal and poultry production for decades now, and the industry has been absolutely adamant that they cannot produce animals without using antibiotics as growth promoters. Well, it turns out they can, and it's about time that they're getting rid of these. It may already be too late as antibiotic resistance becomes more and more prevalent, but this, it seems to me, is an enormous step forward, particularly because if you take the animals out, if you take the antibiotics out, the antibiotic resistant organisms also decline.
On the aspartame, Seth Kaufman, senior vice president for PepsiCo, told NPR's The Salt food blog that aspartame is, quote, literally the number one complaint we've heard from Diet Cola consumers as to why they're drinking less and less Diet Cola, unquote. But Americans are consuming less diet and low-calorie soda in general, I think, not just aspartame. So why do they think, for example, Diet Coke and Diet Pepsi, with both, which both have aspartame, have been the biggest losers. But even Coca-Cola Zero, which has a different sweetener, has seen sales slow to a significant degree. So what's why do you think they're singling out aspartame as the marketing villain here?
Yeah, I'm guessing that they must have done some consumer research, and that's what they're hearing from their consumers. So that's what he said in the statement, is that their customers are telling them that aspartame is what they're worried about. They're not worried about artificial sweeteners in general. They're just worried about aspartame. I'm not sure I believe that, because I've seen the same data that you have. Sales of diet sodas are down, and they're going down by a lot. People don't want those unnatural chemicals in the things that they're eating. They're going to have to find some other kind of sweetener. And there's enough question about other sweeteners as well as aspartame that I think as more evidence comes in, there'll be other ones that the companies are going to want to get rid of.
What's the nature of the sweetener that they're going to replace aspartame with in Diet Pepsi, known as Splenda?
That's the one that is isolated. It starts with sugar, but then it processes it in ways that makes it not digestible. The FDA says it's safe and the levels consumed, but it hasn't been used in the food supply for a long time, and who knows? I think everybody's better off eating sugar, frankly.
Really? I mean, when you see these bills in the state legislature in Albany, for example, to put a tax or to ban the size, like Mayor Bloomberg was trying to do, of sodas, diet sodas are exempt. It's the sugar, it's the high fructose corn syrup, and other kinds of actual sugar that people are most concerned about causing diabetes and other kinds of health effects.
Yeah, well, these are quantitative issues. A little bit of sugar goes a long way, but of course we're Americans. We don't do moderation. So those bills are aimed at trying to cut down on the vast amounts of sugar that are in soft drinks, for example.
And before we go to some phone calls, on the Chipotle story, if they're not going to use GMO organisms, how will consumers see that effect as they go through the line at Chipotle?
Well, I suppose they'll have signs up saying so. I mean, if they're going to, I don't know how they're going to source the amount of non-GMO products that they're going to need. They're going to have to have their sodas, for example, will have to have something other than high fructose corn syrup in them. Or they will have to source their high fructose corn syrup from non-GMO corn. I really don't know how they're going to do that. And they said they expected to have supply chain problems, but would do the best they could with them.
Lex in Morristown, you're on WNYC. Hi, Lex.
Hi, thank you for taking my phone call today.
Sure.
I just have a follow-up with the Chipotle. I'm a food scientist. And Professor, I love your work. I read it all through college. But there was an article in the Times yesterday that was explaining the benefits of GMOs, and I'm a GMO activist personally. And I just think, you know, when you look at developing nations and being able to grow crops in adverse conditions, let it be weather or whatnot, cast looking at Chipotle going completely GMO-free and how that may give the public an incorrect perception of GMOs.
Mary?
Well, most of the GMOs that are actually in production are in first world agriculture. There's very, very little research on agriculture in developing countries because the developing countries can't pay for it. They're not going to be able to pay for the seeds that have to be purchased every year. And so there's never been a real incentive for the biotechnology companies to put a lot of money into research on third world agricultural problems. So I'm not sure that's a real issue.
Even with respect to first world agriculture, I think the Times article, which I read part of, an op-ed, said that it's possible that at least in terms of public health, and this leaves out the environmental concerns, which I think for a lot of people are the bigger concerns with GMO foods, but in terms of human health, there are genetically modified organisms that are modified to be pest resistant, which means that fewer pesticides get used on them. And so the net effect for human health, human exposure to things that are potentially toxic, actually goes down in some of the cases that he was citing. Is that a fair point?
Yeah. Maybe, maybe not. It depends on whether you count glyphosate or not. If you count glyphosate,
what
the
is
use
that?
Of pesticides—that's Roundup, the herbicides that is the herbicide that's used with herbicide-resistant corn and soybeans and so forth. If you count that, then herbicides have increased. So, you know, this is an enormously polarized area, and people pick and choose the data that they're going to use to argue their position. What strikes me about the GMO debates is how unchanged they are from what they were in 1994. We're now 22 years later after they were first approved. And when I was on the FDA Food Advisory Committee in 1994, we heard all of these arguments. And they haven't changed a bit since. And that's really surprising to me. I mean, you would have think that this industry would have moved in the 22 years since its products were approved, but there's been very, very little movement.
Let's take another call. Donna in Katona, you're on WNYC. Hi, Donna.
Hi. Yes, my view is that the Americans should believe the government because the government is on our side. And, you know, there's a lot of issues going on in the world, and according to the GMOs and the food that we eat, if it weren't for the GMOs and the government playing a big role in the spread of the GMOs worldwide, our world would not have enough food supply for the population.
Well, there are different governments who take different positions on this. And Marion Nestle, go ahead and address the content of world food supply. But the government of the UK, for example, has a very different take on GMOs than the government of the United States, right?
Well, one of the arguments that the biotechnology industry had right from the beginning was that you absolutely have to have genetic modification in order to meet the food needs of the rapidly expanding world population. I don't know whether evidence demonstrates that or not. Most of the comparisons that have looked at comparison of use of genetically modified foods and, let's say, organic production show that organic production is only slightly less effective and productive as the genetically modified ones. The differences are really quite small. And so I don't think that that's an argument that holds very much water. The real argument for genetically modified foods is that they would produce things that could grow under very difficult climate conditions, that they would make it possible to have crops that would grow not needing so much water, that they would fix nitrogen, and that they would do other kinds of things that would be really helpful under conditions of climate change. But those are very, very difficult technical problems, and the industry hasn't been able to achieve that yet.
Alex in Milburn, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Brian, good morning. Love your show. 2 points. The first one is that the argument that the GMOs create higher yields, well, that leads to the argument then that it's a public utility that should be regulated and not be private. But the other point that I have is that GMOs are really used in a predatory manner, like Monsanto, to stifle competition among smaller farmers.
It's used to stifle competition among smaller farmers because the big agribusiness companies like Monsanto can dominate more in a GMO-based world?
No, because they bring suits against smaller companies and against smaller farms because their seeds might be blown by the wind, and so they call it a predatory. They're essentially predating by invoking intellectual property theft.
Oh, right,
by
because
they're farmers.
Yes, we've covered cases like that because technically the GMO foods or the GMO-based seeds are intellectual property, patented material. They're not things that grow in nature. Sean in Bradley Beach, you're on WNYC. Hi, Sean.
Hey, Brian. Expanding on the last caller, which he got to a great point, we are. I'm an electrician. I know this sounds weird, but I work with farmers and laboratories that do hybridization, not GMOs, but hybridization of crops. And what no one's talking about is what happens to the soil, not whether this stuff is ingestible or safe to ingest, but where when seeds are used on virgin lots for the first time, crops that had been multicultured crops before, not a monoculture, we see very high nutrient soil, so not the need for fertilizer. Profits are up for the farmer for the first couple of years, and then the profits start to drop because the yields drop. Yields drop, fertilizer use goes up, so profits go down. And then this becomes like a vicious cycle of addiction to the fertilizer, ruining the soil and putting stuff into the water supply that never was intended to be able to absorb this much. Then, of course, you also have the lawsuits and the small farmers. We have more yield based on the fact that we have fewer farmers but a higher amount of yield. That's only because we have put so much land out of production. And if we had that land and more farmers and less Monsantos and those companies suing people, we would have fine yields across the world. And that's where I think GMOs fail.
Sean, thank you. Kathy in Short Hills, you're on Katie. Katie in Short Hills, you're on WNYC. Hi, Katie.
Hi. Thanks so much for taking my call. My question is around the use of antibiotics in poultry and other meat production. I have three young children, and I buy organic meat for our kids, largely because I am concerned about some of the links the antibiotics and growth hormones have on their developing bodies. So the question I have is, now that Tyson is taking out its antibiotics and presumably other producers will follow suit, should I feel better as a parent buying sort of traditionally raised chicken and other meat products, or should I still gear towards organically raised meat and animal products?
Marianne?
Well, that's a value question, and also a question of how much money you have. If you can afford to buy organic meats and you can source organic meats, they're kind of hard to get, then by all means do it. But I think removing the antibiotics from chicken production is a really good thing.
Katie, thank you very much. Well, we do seem to be at a moment with the three stories we've been talking about, Chipotle ceasing the use of genetically modified organisms in its food, Pepsi announcing that it's getting rid of aspartame in Diet Pepsi, and the antibiotic-free chickens to be grown by Tyson. You know, Kraft announced it was dropping artificial dyes in its iconic bright orange macaroni and cheese dinner. McDonald's earlier this year said it would start sourcing chicken raised without antibiotics. And Nestle, no relation, declared it would dump artificial colorings and flavorings from its chocolate candies. Last year, a campaign that included 40,000 Facebook posts helped persuade General Mills to make Cheerios non-GMO. Another one swayed Subway to remove the additive from its breads, because I don't know this chemical, azodicarbonamide from its breads. It's an unprecedented time in terms of consumer influence, isn't it?
It seems to be, and the companies are responding in a way that they never have before, I think because sales are going down. And the voting with your fork aspect of the food movement is working really well. The companies can see that their sales are declining. And remember, we live in an economic system in which it's not enough for McDonald's to make huge billions of dollars in profit every year. It has to grow those profits every 90 days in order to satisfy Wall Street and satisfy its investors. That's an impossible, unsustainable situation. Every food company cannot continue to grow indefinitely. And so some of these older companies are beginning to see the results of consumer concern about what's in their food. I think it's a really good thing.
It's a good thing, but does it take our eye off the ball to some degree? Are these, none of them good things, let's assume, but more politically toxic than actually scientifically toxic in a way that distracts attention from the really big dietary patterns that are affecting public health, primarily sugar and overeating? Is that too simplistic?
I think that's fair to say. On the other hand, there are real issues here. To me, the really important one is people are eating too much, and the food marketing environment is such that people are encouraged to eat far more than would be good for them. And we would all be a lot healthier if we ate unprocessed or relatively unprocessed foods and weren't eating all of these processed foods that have these chemicals in them to begin with. The chemicals don't need to be there. It's just as I think it's fine to have them gone, and I think it's good that the companies are looking for ways to respond to consumer needs, and maybe this is a step towards getting people to eat more healthfully in general.
Marion Nessel, NYU, nutrition and public health professor, and the author of many books, including Food Politics, How the Food Industry Influences Nutrition and Health. Marion, thanks a lot.
My pleasure.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. More to come. Stay tuned.